enforcement community, we have Sheriff Kelly Hansen, Huron County, Bad Axe City Police Chief Dave Rothy, and we have the Huron County Prosecutor Tim Rutkowski. We're going to be talking in particular today about meth. It's been a lot of busts in the area this year, several in Bad Axe, and we're going to be talking about the efforts they've made to try and get it out of the area. First of all, welcome, gentlemen.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank you.
As we were talking a little bit before the show, it seemed like we had the bath salts, and that seems to have quieted down. Is meth the next thing that came to Huron County in a big way?
I would say, and I'm speaking on behalf of the sheriff's office, I think we're all in agreement here, but heroin was in the picture, and then we did see meth pop up. We started getting information at the sheriff's office right around November of last year.
Which is about accurate. And then from there, I think the first meth lab that was detected was here in February. Joint effort by the Bad Axe Police Department and the Sheriff's Department.
Now, the difference between meth and heroin is that meth has to be like manufactured in Colombia or someplace and brought to the area. The heroin has to come from elsewhere, Afghanistan, South America, where meth you can cook up on your own pretty much anywhere if you have the ingredients.
Yeah, with meth, we get these, we call them cookers, and the people that, you know, have the recipe and know how to do it, and they come into an area such as Bad Axe in Huron County, and they cook this meth, and they develop, you know, a target-rich environment, and then other people learn to cook from that method. And talking to a lot of the experts that deal with meth a lot more than we do, they say, you know, when you get in your area, they're going to teach other people how to cook, or other people are going to learn how to cook, and then that's where you're going to have your problem. It's going to spread.
It seems like that's counterproductive to the person who's trying to sell it, is to teach others how to do it. Teach a man to fish, and they can fish on their own.
But you get somebody hooked on meth, and the life expectancy doesn't last long, and it's just a nasty, nasty drug that that spreads rapidly, and there's no friends amongst drug dealers, and today's customers might be somebody else's customers tomorrow.
And many of the cases we're prosecuting, they're making it for them and their friends. But the issues that arise is just like the last case that the Bad Axe Police Department had handled. I mean, the cleanup part of it, when they were taking items out, had three fires. And we're talking about houses with these awful chemicals that are right in residential communities, and they're making this meth.
And it seems kind of odd to me that they would do this in town. There's so many, you know, out-of-the-way little farmhouses that it seems kind of odd to me. That do they just come up from Detroit and they want a city life to do this? Or because it would seem that you'd get a lot more privacy out on some old dirt road somewhere.
Well, we've hit a couple of places on the side roads where it was being cooked, but I don't think it matters. And they don't have to come from an urban setting to make it, because they're teaching the people up here. I mean, there's locals that have been living here that Tim's had trials with recently maybe they have contacts and from somewhere else, because I don't know that it's on any the ingredients are on any billboard here that we're proud of in our county here, but they're bringing it from somewheres, or somebody's teaching them, and these are local people that are making it.
If you look at kind of like the history of meth, I think it tends to be more of a rural or an urban type drug that, Huron County's got just the right setting for it. And I agree with the sheriff, it doesn't matter where it's at, but, you know, here in Bad Axe, we work hand in hand with the sheriff's department, because these investigations are time consuming, and they take a lot of manpower, and they take a lot of work to get them together. And it's just a nasty drug that's popular in the rural areas.
For us, I mean, we've been successful because of law enforcement's efforts as a unit. We've kind of talked about this before. If you try to address these problems, and Sheriff Hansen and Chief Rothy had brought this up, and it's so true, to try to address it, you have to meet it head on, and these cookers are the problems. So what we have is we have the sheriff saying we're putting our efforts forward to investigate and prosecute these cases. The Bad Axe Police Department with Chief Rothy saying the same thing, and our office is united with them saying, you know what, on these meth cases, we're just going to try them. And we have, and the juries have been receptive to the information. We've had three meth trials so far, and we've had three convictions on these people. And that's because I believe that the jurors listen attentively, and they can see what damage and how dangerous this process and these drugs can be.
Do they categorize meth different than some of the other drugs because it's wholly manufactured rather than coming from some organic source such as marijuana, even heroin and cocaine come from a plant or some other thing at the beginning? Meth is pretty much just, you know, chemistry 101. Is there any difference in that? Does it make it more dangerous because you don't know what's in it?
Well, I think part of it, that's what the legislature had come up with, and they've classified it by way of a sentence as a more serious chemical to be caught with or to manufacture than, say, even heroin or bath salts. We've discussed this before. I mean, these gentlemen have worked on these bath salt cases involving Mr. Alent there, worked very hard, able to get 8 convictions on him to put him out of business. But at the end of the day, we had to argue very hard in front of the judge to get a sentence above the guidelines because the legislature doesn't treat bath salts the way they probably should have, which is like meth or heroin. And so I think the legislature has already made that call. They said that meth is a more serious drug, and if you're manufacturing it, they want to put a crimp on it. You do that by increasing the guidelines.
But traditionally, the legislature has had trouble catching up with the drug industry. I mean, you went through this even with the bath salts because they changed the formula just a little bit, and all of a sudden what they're selling now doesn't fall under the guidelines of what they made illegal, and they have to either change the law or you've got nothing. It makes it difficult.
The thing to remember about drug dealers and meth cookers and bath salt providers and creators is this is their lifestyle. This is what they do for a living. They don't have jobs, and they are quick to change things, and they are moving at a rapid pace. It's almost like technology moving at a rapid pace, and everybody else is trying to catch up to it. And when the legislature tries to get something passed, it's time-consuming. It's got to go through, you know, a process to get passed. So you are correct. We're always behind. It's almost like, you know, we're always chasing it, trying to catch it.
Most of these people in our local level, which I would think would rise up to where bath salts were created, these people don't have a usual life like you and I do, or the rest of us have. We're responsible for being at work to take care of our family and obligations. A lot of these people, unfortunately, are living off of society, and society's letting that occur. They've got nothing but time on their hands. And a couple of those people during the bath salts ordeal, you talk to them and you swear you're talking to a scientist because they knew all the properties and how that's put together and how it was skirting through the system there. Yet if they put their time and effort towards being a productive individual, they wouldn't have time to get addicted to that stuff, and they wouldn't be dealing bad hands of cards to the kids that they have at the start of their life, to where they're starting to head down a one-way road that is leading to nowheres.
Is this a starter drug, or do people tend to work up to meth? It seems awfully powerful, and you know, do you find that the people who are using it tend to be a little older and have more of a drug history in the past rather than being their starting point?
In my experience and what we've dealt with here in Bad Axe, the people we've dealt with in meth have a history with law enforcement in narcotics, so it's not their first rodeo. They've been around, they've been arrested before for drugs. So in my opinion, what's happened in Bad Axe is we're seeing the more experienced drug user. And I'm not sure if they're getting bored with what they're doing and they want to, you know, seek another thrill and try meth, or exactly what the issue is. But in Bad Axe, I think we're seeing they're not the new drug users or the experienced ones that are using. They have history with law enforcement.
I think a lot of it too. You know, we've seen an increase in heroin after the bath salts, and that's a lot more, in my opinion, or what I was taking it as, it's a lot more, costs a lot more money to go and buy that heroin as opposed to making your own fix. And that's just how I opinionated that maybe meth is a lot cheaper. And you're not having to risk going and buying it on a street corner. You can make it in your own house, for the lack of better words.
that you run to the local store and you buy this item here. And even the trial we had last week, the ingredients were purchased in four different locations. So, I mean, they're smart enough to go to this store and buy the muriatic acid, go to this store and buy the Sudafed, go to this store and buy some lye, go to this store and buy, you know, the ice or the cold packs in which you get the ammonium nitrate out of. It's just, you know, they go from here to there. And I think I don't know if it was Sheriff or Chief Rothy made this point, but it's true. As it relates to meth, these meth cases are all our local people. That's the ones we're dealing with. The ones that are coming in with the heroin, they're not always the local people. That is something that comes up from Detroit and Flint and bringing it up here. Whether it's some people that live up here that are going down to get it, or whether or not we're having people from Detroit coming right up here. We had one sentence yesterday, which was a Bad X investigation that the Sheriff's Department participated in. Corey Thompson, he was sentenced yesterday to 13 years and 2 months to 20 years in prison on all his counts. And that, I mean, that's a good message, in my opinion, to send to the community that we're working hard from the law enforcement perspective to make sure that these people show up, they're going to get prosecuted and going to get...
Does the quality of life we have up here kind of attract them? We don't have the gangs that are going to kill you because you went on my turf to sell three blocks away. I mean, you're pretty much out of that inner city type of environment if you move up into a rural area like this.
Well, one of the things that concerned me when we were dealing with Corey Thompson that just got sentenced was he was coming up here bringing approximately, you know, $3,000 worth of heroin up here and getting rid of it in a day and a half. And what concerns me about that is Bad X in Huron County is a target-rich environment. You wouldn't come up from Detroit with that amount of money, carrying a handgun, and carrying that amount of drugs unless you knew you could get rid of them. So they're coming to Huron County. It's a target-rich environment, and they're getting rid of it. So my biggest concern for the county is we've got a lot of drug users in the county. A lot of if we wouldn't have that demand up here in Huron County, they wouldn't be coming up here to get rid of their product. So, you know, that's one thing that, you know, we're always concerned with in law enforcement.
Are we kind of, though, you know, almost fooling ourselves? I mean, drugs are everywhere. I mean, there's going to be a demand pretty much in any community you go to these days. It's not an isolated thing for urban inner city areas. So for people to come up and take advantage of it just seems kind of natural.
You know, you are correct, and I agree with you that they are coming to a target-rich environment. And what has created this target-rich environment? What has created all the drug use up here in Huron County? And you said it, you know, it's everywhere, but, you know, we're not used to that being up here. And a lot of times, and when I talk to people about drugs, I say, if you talk to somebody that's involved in the drug industry or in the drug use or the drug sales, they'll tell you that it's everywhere and everybody's doing it. But if you go turn around and you talk to somebody that's not involved in that lifestyle, that doesn't have nothing to do with that lifestyle, they'll say we don't have a problem. So it depends on, you know, you have both sides of the scale here. And I'm not speaking for the sheriff or the prosecutor, but I'm telling you, we've got an issue in this county and we seem like a target-rich environment to the point where people come up from the city with that amount of drugs and sell them up here.
Well, we hear from law enforcement, though, from when they're doing their investigations. As the sheriff mentioned, you know, we had this big bust over from Caseville and we're working on things. But every time we do this, we make it that much more uncomfortable for these people here. And I think that's all you can really expect. There is a slim chance of saying we're going to eradicate drugs. You're just not going to do it. But if you make it uncomfortable enough where they said, you know what, I don't want to do this in Bad X, I don't want to do this in Huron County because this is what's going to end up happening to you, then we can say we're making a difference and we're being successful, trying to keep it out of our schools, trying to keep it out of our communities.
I'd like to believe of our 31,000 or whatever our population currently is, I'd like to believe that the actual clientele involved in the hardened drugs, as in meth and heroin, probably I'd like to believe it's no more than 7-8% of that population. Now, I don't know that for sure. I really don't. But I'd like to point out on my behalf that I don't believe that our county is overrun by drug dealers or overrun by, you know, the drug trade. But just that small percentage, those people being involved, that affects society in a big way. I mean, that spreads out from the, from those very few. That spreads out through their kids and in school, through the hospitals, through here in behavioral health, things of that nature there. So that you see a big impact there. It's like I think he just said, you talk to the known drug user, they'll say there's a major problem. You talk to the people that's not involved, can't believe that it's going on. Well, I'd like to believe that it's between 7-8% of our population. Now, I don't have very good facts to even back that up, other than the information that I hear on a daily basis with our buys, the stuff that are the information that's coming in, and just traveling around the county. In a week's time, I'm everywhere in the county at some point.
You know, Sheriff, I would agree with you. I agree with what you just said, you know, probably about 7-8%. And the one thing that we do as law enforcement, we deal with, you know, 7-8, maybe 10% of the population 95% of the time. And, you know, we're always dealing with the same clientele and the same people, you know, over and over again. But I'd agree with what the sheriff said.
You talk about the ripple effect, though. And these gentlemen, you can ask them, it's not just the cases that they investigate for drugs that they bring to us, but it's the larceny from a building, the home invasions, all the different theft cases or child abuse and neglect. It doesn't really matter. But drugs affects it all. I mean, it really does. I
don't know how many cases. It brings other crime with it.
Yeah. How many of our people that are involved with the meth or involved with the bath salts or involved with heroin have been involved with larcenies, whether that's a home invasion or, you know, to fund their habit or just stealing? Be just Walmart. I mean, we're not talking the whole conversation. We're not talking about marijuana. We're talking about the hardened drugs, and that's really where much of this stuff stems from, and the ripple effect out from it.
And when you've got somebody that's a drug user, and they don't have a job, and they need to buy it somewhere, that's what they're going to do, is resort to crime. It reminds me of the gentleman from Ubley that was sent to prison for all the home invasions that he was doing home invasions to get money to support his drug habit. You know, they don't have jobs to pay for it, and like the sheriff said earlier, you know, normal people in this county, they have responsibility, they have a job they have to go to, and they have family obligations, and they got other things that they got to attend to. You got to understand that this lifestyle these people are living isn't a normal lifestyle.
Is it difficult because most of the ingredients are common over the counter types of things? The laws have been made to keep the Sudafed behind the counter, so you can't go in there and buy 50 packs of it. And you know, like, I really have a head cold. Try and explain it that way. I mean, you got to ask for it, and they may have to go to 8 different stores to get enough, but they aren't going to get it all in one shot to try to make it difficult. Is there any other things involved in meth production that, you know, if they restricted it more or would maybe put a more crimp on it? You're talking lye. I mean, you can get that for soap and all kinds of other stuff. It's you know,
all
ice
those
packs,
ingredients. Yeah, all those ingredients you buy over the counter. As far as being more restrictive, I just, as Chief Rothy had mentioned this earlier, with talking to the people that deal with meth on a daily basis, they said you just have to be tough on it and send the message. And I think we're doing that now as we see more and more of these people get sentenced. Mr. Welshin's got sentenced to prison for 3.5, I believe. Mr. Hartman went for 3. We have a conviction from yesterday, so that person's going to be sentenced in October. Mr. Apley is awaiting his sentence, and I think the more that the message gets out, if you're involved with the making of meth, supplying the chemicals, all those things, it's the punishment is there. It's more of a matter of now letting them see what the court can do by way of sentences. Would you agree? I mean, that's really where it's at, where these people got to see that you can't be doing this, or this
right.
is what's going to happen to you.
You know, a lot of the items are available at all the stores. You know, you can go buy them over the counter, and it gets to the point where, you know, how much do you have to regulate this? You know, they regulate the Sudafed. That's a controlled substance, but a lot of the other stuff, muriatic acid and lithium strips and stuff, that's, you can find them every day. So where do you stop, you know, banning? Where do you stop regulating stuff? I mean, I think it's just a tough line to draw.
We haven't given all the ingredients out.
Well, I took some criticism early on about bringing this out. I mean, we made arrangements. For the first responders, there was a session held at the Bad Axe Fire Hall. We had one over in Elkton and one over in Harbor Beach. and the merchants are paying attention to this. They're giving us calls when they see some knucklehead coming in. Oh, shouldn't have said that. But see somebody coming in and, you know, scratching and just not looking right and making major purchases or trying to make purchases of the Sudafed. And we're getting tips on that. And to me, the community is becoming aware of it, and they're helping us. I mean, that's my opinion. I don't know if you fellas agree.
Well, I agree with you, Sheriff. The more information we get out, and you know, like Craig, you mentioned, you know, hope we're not giving all the information. There's something out there called the internet, and they can find that information a couple clicks of the button. So there's nothing that we can say or any information we can give out that these people can't find with, you know, 15 minutes on the internet.
Yeah, we're bringing this out to the public. This is already happening, and we're behind them in as far as technology goes.
Now, you mentioned, like, the pharmacies are looking at the Sudafed and that. What do regular people need to look for? I mean, if you're going to have one, a lot of people didn't even know they had one living next door to them. I mean, what do you look for? Do you look for the traffic like a drug house? Do you look for odors? Is there, you know, is there something that they can you know, spot and maybe help tip you off? If tips are what leads to most investigations, it seems like people need to know what to look for.
The Welsh one we had in Baddocks here on Butler Street, the neighbors had talked about, when we were talking to the neighbors afterwards, they talked about, you know, sometimes getting a foul odor, almost like an acidic-type smell occasionally. And
muriatic acid almost smells like rotten eggs, if I remember that from high school chemistry. I mean, it's something you'd notice.
Yeah, in the process of making it creates a foul odor also. So, you know, that's one thing to look at. It wasn't consistent. It was frequent, but not, you know, consistent. But then the discarded, they'll use like a Gatorade bottle. And Gatorade's got a thicker plastic to it than a pop bottle. So they use a lot of Gatorade bottles. So you see discarded Gatorade bottles in the backyard. And then they're not just clear Gatorade bottles. They got, you know, crud in them. So, you know, look for discarded items. You look for, you know, batteries that have been pulled apart that may be tossed in the trash or set out there. You look for, you know, empty containers. So, you know, your neighbor sets their trash out and they've got, you know, four bottles of muriatic acid empty sitting out there at the curb, you know, and it's wintertime. You know, that might be a tip. Just little things like that, you know, that the neighbors can look for. And traffic in and out.
Because most places with drug activity have traffic at weird hours, from what I know of it. I'm not involved in it, but I hear from all of you guys, you know, that they're going there day and night. And yeah, you go there day and night and somebody's coming and going all the time. Usually that would be a good indicator.
But you got to remember, too, making the meth is mobile now. I mean, you can get a Gatorade bottle and you can toss your ingredients in and you throw them in a backpack and you can make it as you go, as you drive around town. It's a mobile, mobile manufacturing.
But doesn't this stuff have a flashpoint? I mean, you're talking about, you know, one of the last one over by
the one on Oliver Street.
Oliver Street. That one, I mean, it was just, you were carrying it out and it just ignited. Right. You wouldn't want that in your backpack.
Right, it ignited three different times.
And they do. I mean, some of the training that, I mean, in a couple presentations of the three trainings we had, they'll show a car blowing up.
And it's just spontaneous? It doesn't need a flashpoint? It's just, if it's like nitroglycerin shook wrong, it can start burning?
Well, you know, it creates a chemical reaction inside that bottle, and it's just like any other bottle. When you shake it up and it expands, the pressure inside gets, at some point in time, it's going to blow. Thing with the Gatorade bottles, why they use those, the plastic's thicker, so it'll withstand a little bit more pressure. But once that pressure builds a certain point and it blows, you know, it blows, and then those chemicals are exposed to air, you know, that creates I guess you call a flash, and you know, an ignition system, and that's what we experience on Oliver Street. You know, when they, you know, you're just bringing it outside and it gets exposed and ignites, and you know, those are the issues. And to be honest with you, these people that are going around making this stuff, I really don't think, you know, fire is their main concern. I think making the final product and getting stoned is their main concern. I don't think they're you know, geez, I can't do this because it might explode on me. But see, that's where the danger comes in with the public.
Now, is this something smoked? Is this something that you inject? I mean, you can do cocaine several different ways. Is meth the same way? Do people do it in different fashions?
We've had, in talking to the users, we've had them where they'll inhale the fumes. They'll smoke it and they'll inject it. That's their consumption methods. I don't know, Sheriff, you're
anywhere else? Who knows all, you know, what else they've tried? Because
apparently they'll try anything.
Yes.
Yes.
My gosh. What can the average person do? I mean, is it just vigilance in the community to tip you off? I mean, I know the sheriff has certain personnel that really basically only use drugs. You have, in the Bad Axe Police Department, you have your detectives that look into all this stuff. Do you need to get a hold of people who you can tip them off, and then they know what to look for and can find it? Or
my recommendation to anybody that suspects a neighbor of having meth or, you know, using any type of drugs, or somebody of someone any type of drugs, you know, call your local police department. If we get a call at the Bad Axe Police Department and they say something's happening and it's outside our jurisdiction, we get a hold of the Sheriff's Department right away, and we work with them on developing that and developing a case. And one thing about Huron County, you know, we can't be a standalone department. We have to rely on the help of others, and we're all in this drug battle together. And I suggest if anybody, you know, knows or suspects or thinks that there might be a problem going on, give the local agency, the Sheriff's Department, a call, and the tips will be followed up on.
There isn't one of the, I believe we've got 14 agencies, there isn't one that would not assist us, or at least we have not run into any kind of friction, because they know they can't do it alone, and they know we can't do it alone. We have, we're probably the bigger, we are the biggest department in the thumb, and we have people dedicated, and we're not scared about paying overtime. We got people that are not scared of working overtime. We've spent a lot of resources, both money and manpower, over this last year, especially working the heroin ring that we had going on the western side of the county, the meth. And as long as the commissioners are backing us, I guess we're going to continue doing that. Now there's forfeitures that help beef up our resources there, but you know, I don't want to ever be coming down here and bragging that we have $100,000 in the bank worth of cash forfeitures, because then we do have a major problem.
Well, things you get forfeited for drugs usually has to go back into drug enforcement.
Drug enforcement only.
So it just can't be used for anything. Mm-hmm. What is the liability for someone who's, say, leasing their house or renting their house to somebody who decides to do this? I mean, are they partly responsible because they should be checking up on their renters? Are they supposed to if something happens, you know, it's all going to go back to whoever's got insurance, and I'm sure the guys cooking up the meth don't.
Well, for those individuals that know what's going on and they're renting it out and they are allowing it to go out, then you talk about maintaining a drug house. I mean, they're the owners of it and they're allowing it to happen. That
but
is
does
a charge
forfeiture come into it? I mean, right away, if even if you didn't know and it's all going on there? Because I would imagine, besides just having them gone, you're going to have a hefty cleanup bill before you can rent that house again.
You know, the one thing, you talk about cleanup, we have to have a specialized team come in and clean this. And we don't have, as we sit here today, we don't have the training or the funds to provide a cleanup. So we have to rely on other agencies to come up with cleanup, and that may change somewhere down the road. But yeah, that is a big issue. You know, and as far as somebody renting their house out knowing that somebody's using meth, if a landlord knows his tenant's using meth, then yeah, we've got an issue with that, and we'll forfeit their house. We'll do whatever we can to send a message across that. But if you've got a landlord that's renting to the tenant and's got no idea, you know, what's going on, you know, we can't expect us to become a society of babysitters and constantly look over the shoulder for who's doing something wrong. We got to hold the people that are doing it wrong accountable for their actions and hold them accountable for their responsibility and hold them responsible for what they are doing, and put the blame on their shoulders.
I can think of several, not just meth and heroin search warrants that we've been involved in, but marijuana and others, where we had the grounds to probably proceed to take the house in forfeiture, but they were renting it, or there was such a lien on it, it would have been a burden, money owed against it would have been a burden on the county to have taken it.
And that's some of the, that's an accurate thing. When you talk about, as an attorney, you can forfeit this property because they're selling out of here. Well, if they have a $100,000 mortgage on it and we forfeit it, the county's responsible for the paying off of that mortgage first, and then if you sell the house, whatever you get for it. So we try to judiciously use those major forfeitures to see whether or not it is something that is advantageous for us to proceed on forfeiture-wise.
Forfeitures are to assist us in our efforts, yep. not to drag us down. That's no. My opinion.
Sure. Right. Sure. It'd be the same thing if it was in the city of Bad Axe and there was a house and we went to forfeit that. We don't want to put the residents in Bad Axe footing the bill for somebody that's behind on their mortgage payments by a lot. I mean, but you have to look at every case individually. You look at cases involving vehicles or cash you've seized. Those are sort of easier circumstances. But real estate sometimes can be a little tricky.
And they can take rather nice houses for this stuff. We had the marijuana growing in the basement that, you know, turned out to be a medical marijuana deal. But that was a very nice house. I mean, it wasn't some, you know, shack in the on a back road somewhere. I mean, they can be looking for any type of house to do some type of activity. So, you know, the landlord beware type of thing. Anything on the horizon, what the next thing might be if we get rid of meth in the area? I mean, is heroin going to then kind of take its place?
Tim Pinch Craig, because I think he's dreaming right now. But
Well, I mean, you know, if you take a good bite out of it, like you did with the bath salts and other things, you know, crack was a big deal for a while, and I'm sure it's still in here a little bit.
It's still around.
But, you know, it's this seems to be what's in the forefront right now. Is something just ready to take its place?
And I can't speak for these gentlemen, but in my opinion, if you look at things, the number one drug problem we have in this county is heroin. Heroin and prescription drugs. That's what we see the most of. The meth cases, the reason they're in the news is because, as Chief Rothy mentioned, we don't see very many of these cases. But now that they're here, we've really taken a proactive approach and saying, we're going to go to trial on these things. We're going to charge these people. We're going to proceed on. But if you look at the number of cases that we have involving meth compared to the ones we have involving heroin or prescription drugs, that's really where it's at. And can you wipe that out? No.
Prescription drugs, though, that's usually just an arrest. They've taken it from a relative or a friend or somebody.
Not necessarily.
But then I see all the reports of people who say, I had 50 Vicodin in my thing and now there's none. And yeah. I had a party yesterday and here's the people who were there.
Yeah.
But, you know, then you've got the meth cases, which, you know, you're there 8 hours, it becomes a media event.
We run into, you know, in Bad Axe, we run into a lot of prescription fraud where you'll get somebody that will call up the pharmacy. You know, all the pharmacies are located in Bad Axe, a majority of the pharmacies are located in Bad Axe, and they'll call up and say, hey, I'm so-and-so from this doctor's office, and I need to fill this prescription, and you know, the pharmacists are on top of things, and we get a call, and we end up tracking it back, and we end up prosecuting, and we've got several cases that are in the works right now on prescription fraud, and so prescription drugs is a big problem, and we've had where they... where they'll pour or to take their pills out, you know, put them in a baggie or take them to somewhere and leave their pill bottles in the car and then say they claim the car was broken into and issues like that. So, you know, I agree with the prosecutor that, you know, prescription drugs and heroin, you know, is a big issue and meth. I hate to say this, but I think meth is just getting started. And I think we're going to have issues.
Well, you know, Chief said it's true. You mentioned about the time frame, the time that's spent on these meth cases. But if you think about how much time is spent on investigating as simple of a case as my prescription drugs were stolen on my car, only turned out to be false. They spend a lot of time. And these things are very time consuming in tracking down through maps and whatever, you know, these different claims that people make about, well, I'm Jill Smith. I'm from Dr. Ho's office or whatever. And I want to... you know, have my prescription filled. And turns out, and they're using somebody's birthday. We've charged somebody recently with a Bad Axe City case that it was identity theft and obtaining controlled substance by fraud. I mean, there's a lot there to those, but I think that it takes time.
And all of these are narcotic drugs. I mean, obviously, no one's going there for blood pressure medicine.
Right. Yeah.
I got to get my cholesterol down somehow. Yeah. You know, it's all narcotics, and it's all for the high.
Xanax, Vicodin, others.
Oxycodone. That one seems
better
to be,
quoting.
I see in those.
Better quoting, there's just a ton of it.
Mm-hmm.
And these people figure it out some way or another, where if they, like I said, and maybe I'm old-fashioned, but if they were being productive with their life, they would have other things to occupy in their mind other than worrying about or trying to get around the system in getting high. Like I say, that's an old-fashioned statement maybe, but that's what it's coming down to.
So vigilance is the weapon of choice at this point.
We're gonna be hitting it hard. I'm not out of steam. I spent a lot of time this year myself on surveillance. These guys, we would run into each other at some point or another doing search warrants or just working together. I think everybody's committed. I am, and there's a lot of people at that sheriff's office that are committed to putting in their time too. So we're going to be, unfortunately, I can't sit here and tell you that we're going to have the whole thing under control. I don't think that's ever going to happen, but we do have people on their toes. We do know we've changed the way that they're doing business, and we do know that we've made some very positive impacts, and one we can all sit here and agree on, and that was the bath salts. You don't very seldom ever hear anything about the bath salts. It still floats up here, there's no doubt about it, but we're not the headquarters like we were.
Can I give you some quick statistics since I compiled things?
Sure.
we talk about drug prosecutions and the cases that we've pushed through with the help of the Sheriff's Department, Bad Axe PD, and the other agencies. Over the last 4 years, we've averaged about 26 new felony drug cases upstairs in front of Judge Knobloch. Previous to that, the prior administration averaged just under 10 a year that they filed. This year, we're on pace. We had 35 already filed. And it's not because there's a larger drug epidemic. I think it's more along the lines of we've really been hammering on the drug issues. Nobody has come to me, and I doubt if they've come to these gentlemen and said, you know what, I think you're too hard on these people that are dealing with the drugs and that. I mean, if you wound up somebody saying that,
they'd be the ones investigated at the end of the day.
But the point is that we've done that, and the other side of it is, you know, people sometimes talk about plea agreements and things like that. We only enter into plea agreements when it's advantageous to the people of the state of Michigan. If it's not advantageous to us and the residents of this county, then we're not going to engage in it. And we've taken a harder stand, but we've been fortunate enough to have these people admit to the greatest charge that we've on these drug cases in almost 90% of the cases, 89% in the last 4 years. You know, whereas before it was 50%. And so we're just trying to improve on that and trying to give support to these people because, I mean, they're on the front, they're investigating every day, and they can have the best investigators and they can do the best police work. But if it comes to our office and we fail to do what we need to do, it's really tough for these guys to do what they need to do as well. So trying to work together.
Yeah, absolutely working together. You know, and I'll speak on behalf of my officers, my department, and the officers that we work with, the sheriff department, and the sheriff himself, because he's actively out there working with us. This county's got damn good officers. And I'll put our officers up against anybody else in the state, hands down. They are not only good police officers, they're good investigators. They are good at wrapping things up. They're good at putting things together. And when we put it on the prosecutor's office, or we put it on his desk, whether it's us or the sheriff department or another agency working with us, and we put that on his desk, It's tidied up and we've wrapped up all the loose ends. You know, we don't present a pile of junk to them, and that's kind of where it starts. It starts with the police officers putting that together, and then the detectives get involved in the surveillance and the administration get involved in getting that over there. Then once we put on Tim's desk, then it really turns into his office doing their job, and they do a great job when we send it over there. And it, them digging their heels and saying, you know what, we've had enough and we're going to take this to trial. We've got a strong enough case. We've got enough confidence in the people in the prosecutor's office that this is where it's going to go. And you know, you draw your line in the sand, and that's where you stick. And a lot of people in the county sometimes get a little cheesed at the police officers when they get a ticket or they get stopped or something like that. But they should be thankful that this county's got some top-notch, damn good officers.
That's true.
And people would probably be surprised how long it takes to put a case together. You get used to seeing it on TV in an hour. They've got it solved and chung chung, the guy's in prison. This is not something that happens with you. You have to build a case. You have to make sure all of the evidence is admissible and everything is done with warrants. And sometimes you have to have enough evidence to get the warrant, and it takes a little time to do that. So if people do give you a tip or something, don't expect that, you know, tomorrow there's going to be a bust, unless the real life is in danger immediately, that you have to cross your T's and dot your I's and make sure you got a case to hand to the prosecutor.
There's some disappointed individuals that turn that stuff over, that believe we're not acting quick enough. It takes time, you know, when you have to convince a judge to authorize you to go and break in somebody's door. That just doesn't come from a telephone call from somebody who thought they heard. I mean, that you have to prove a lot of elements and facts in order for the prosecutor to proceed over to or move over to the judge to sign that search warrant. So that takes time. I need to also point out, there's been information and tips that have come in that we've not been able to act on because we've had to prioritize a couple of things. I hate to say it, but there's been some marijuana situations that not that we condone it by any stretch, but we had to prioritize working the meth and the heroin, and we're getting to those. But there's also some disappointment that we didn't get to them right away. You know, we're a small outfit that I think we've made an awful lot of accomplishments, and it's with the help of the other police departments.
Kind of getting close to the end of our time here. I was just wondering, if people suspect something, can they call 911? I know the sheriff has a confidential tip line. What do people need to do?
Well, people can call, you know, speaking of Bad Axe, you know, people can call the Bad Axe Police Department at 989-269-6470 and leave the information. They can remain anonymous. They don't need to, when they talk to the officer, they don't need to leave their name, and we'll follow up. We always like to get a name and a callback number so we can keep them updated and informed on what's going on. But for Bad Axe, you know, they can call us, and if it's not in our jurisdiction, we'll definitely pass it on to the sheriff's department, whoever's jurisdiction it is.
If they decide to call dispatch, it's that number's 269-6421. That's a non-emergency number. They will get information to us, or they can call our office. 269-6500. That's during regular business hours. And then our confidential tips line, which is a recording, is 269-2861.
And there is somebody who will be listening to the recording in short order. It's not something you guys forget about.
It's checked along with other methods of monitoring what's happening. And we have a website at the sheriff's office. If somebody wants to send in tips, you can go right to the county's website, and that information gets to us.
And this would be for neighbors or parents who think the kids have a problem. The start is to seek outside help, because you can't handle it on your own.
Right.
Absolutely. And we can't do without the public's help.
Thanks for being with us today. I know we haven't solved the problem, but hopefully we got some information out for people who hear about it and think it's not really happening, or it's a city problem, and it's not. Our guests today on the program have been Huron County Sheriff Kelly Hansen, Bad Axe Police Chief Dave Rothy, and Huron County Prosecutor Tim Rutkowski. And I do want you to stay tuned. Coming up the top of the hour, we will clue you in on all the latest in the news.
At home, at work, or on your tractor. Thanks for listening to the Thumb's Hottest Country, AM 1340 WLEW. What's a guy gotta do to get a girl in this town? I wanna be alone when the
sun goes down, just a sweet little something.